Chapter 3. The phone rang at 9 a.m. the next morning, as Dan was having his third cup of coffee and thinking about the prior day's interview. He picked it up on the first ring, his heart racing, yet knowing that it could not yet be the expected phone call. "Dan speaking," he said, trying to remain calm.
"Is this Mr. Amore?"
a woman's cheerful voice asked.
"Yes, it is," he responded.
"Please hold for Mr. Lance."
After a few seconds, a familiar voice came over the line.
"Good morning, Dan. I have some good news. We'd like to offer you the academic dean position, starting immediately. What do you say to that?"
"I'm very pleased, Mr. Lance, and I accept."
"It's just Marvin, remember? When can you come in?"
"I can be there Monday, if that's all right."
"Any chance you can make it today before the close of business? I know it's Friday and short notice, but I'd like to get the paperwork started and schedule you to spend the day with our senior dean at the flagship school in Manhattan on Monday, if that's at all possible."
Dan was surprised at this and a bit puzzled at the rush, but he acquiesced and promised to be there by noon. Already showered, he dressed and grabbed his leather portfolio with copies of transcripts and his passport and social security card in case it was requested by HR. He called his girlfriend to give her the good news.
"Hey, Linda, remember your skepticism at my landing the dean's job yesterday?"
he asked, beaming, when his girlfriend answered the phone.
"Yeah,"
she answered with a hesitant, questioning tone.
"What about it?" "Well, I got the job, and I'm leaving for work in a few minutes. I wanted you to be the first to know."
"You got the job a day after the interview and are starting today?" she asked incredulously.
"Congratulations, Dan, but does that sound right to you?"
"I'll admit it surprised me how quickly they made the offer, but I'm sure they have their reasons. Maybe their last dean left them in the lurch by leaving without giving adequate notice. Or maybe he was fired. Who knows? They're a small school with a limited staff, and they don't have anyone competent to step in other than on a short-time basis."
"Maybe," Linda responded, sounding unconvinced. "But be careful. You can be incredibly naive at times."
"Yes, Mom. I'll be careful not to inadvertently sign on to a cocaine distribution facility or a brothel masquerading as a business school, even though I have the credentials for the latter, at least, as a member in good standing of the world's second oldest profession," Dan quipped.
"Look, just be careful, all right?" Linda insisted. "Remember the time you were approached at a bus stop by Queens College while waiting for the bus to take you to work, and the four guys in the car that stopped and offered you a management training job on the spot?"
"Yeah," Dan said, blushing. "I guess I just looked like management material, all cute and cuddly in a nice suit on my way to work after classes, and they could tell quality when they saw it."
"Joke all you want, Dan, but you actually gave them your real phone number, and they called you at home the next day, too, remember?"
Okay, point taken. That was stupid. But they left me alone when I lied and told them I had been offered a promotion and was not interested in the non-specific management position they were offering."
And just what do you think that position was, really? Even at the time, it did not occur to you that no legitimate employer would ever recruit at a bus stop from a car with four guys in it? Or did you really want to become the local drug dealer?
"They caught me by surprise and seemed like nice folk. Jamaicans, I think, by the accent of the guy doing all the talking. Well-dressed, well-spoken. I guess I didn't want to offend them. I don't know."
"You are by far the smartest idiot I know. I love you, but you lack the basic common sense that God gave the average gerbil. If you don't find some soon, you'll live to regret it."
"I don't need common sense. I have cuddly, delectable you as my personal Jiminy Cricket," he quipped, smiling.
glad she could not see him still blushing.
Just be careful, okay? Promise?
I promise. I do. But now I gotta run. I want to call Mom and Dad to give them the good news, and I'm going to take the subway again rather than have to look for parking and risk being late. I'll stop by tonight. Big hug.
I'll see you then, Linda replied. And Dan, congratulations on the job. I mean it. Sorry if I'm a bit cautious, but you need a keeper sometimes. See you tonight.
Always wanted to be a kept man, Dan replied as he sent her a kiss over the phone and heard her sigh as she hung up the receiver. Dan called his parents and, speaking to them in Spanish, as usual, related the good news about his having accepted the dean's job. His mom was thrilled, though she would have been thrilled if he told her that he had decided to open a business to sell ice to Eskimos and would immediately offer to invest all their life savings in his company. When his dad came on the phone, his first question after congratulating him was predictable.
How much money will they pay you?
When Dan answered, he groaned and repeated an offer made many times before to give him the money to open a law practice, hire a legal secretary, and practice the profession he had sacrificed so much to achieve. He was not mollified by Dan's assurance that this was just a stepping stone and that the salary would soon improve when he had a chance to prove his worth. At 11 a.m., Dan bid his parents goodbye, told them that he had to leave for work, and assured them he'd call them later that evening. He then left for the subway station, eager to begin his new career. Chapter 4. A half hour later, Dan was at the lobby of the Wang office building, waiting for the elevator. The place was teeming with people going about their business in typically harried New York fashion. He got on the elevator and pushed a button for the fourth floor, arriving at 11:50 a.m. for his first day on the job. Chaisha, the slightly plump, impeccably dressed receptionist, beamed at him from behind her desk.
Welcome, Dina Moore.
Dan, please, Dan replied, returning her warm smile. I'm here to see Mr. Lance, he continued.
Yes, he's waiting for you. You can go right in.
Dan nodded and made his way through the door to his right and saw Marvin walking toward him at the end of the hallway.
Welcome, Dan, Marvin beamed and held out his hand when he reached him.
Good morning, Mr. Lance.
Dan took and shook the offered hand. It's just Marvin, Marvin retorted, shepherding Dan to his office.
Come in. We have some paperwork for you to sign with Bob, but let's chat for a few minutes. Then I want you to introduce you to the faculty who will be taking lunch in the conference room shortly.
Dan followed behind and took the same chair he had occupied the previous day while Marvin went up to the little side table to pour some freshly brewed coffee.
Do you want some coffee, or would you prefer tea?
Coffee, please, always. Thank you, Dan replied.
Marvin poured two cups and asked, Cream and sugar?
Black, please.
Marvin prepared both cups and gave one to Dan.
This is really good coffee, Marvin. Thank you. I taste an espresso roast with just a hint of vanilla. Really good.
You know your coffee.
Yes, I grind and blend my own. About two-thirds espresso roast with one-third French vanilla. At least that's the blend for today. I like some variety.
I drink espresso all day on a regular drip coffee maker when I don't have an espresso machine.
I drink espresso all day, even on regular drip coffee makers. And I always grind the beans in the Turkish coffee setting. The finer, the better. My girlfriend and parents want me to cut back for fear I'll caffeinate myself into an early grave, but better a short caffeinated life than a long, dreadful life drinking decaf, Dan retorted, chuckling.
I wanted you to meet with me today, Marvin said, after taking another sip of his coffee, so that you can be processed and ready to spend the day with our senior dean at the flagship school in Midtown Manhattan on Monday.
Depending on how that goes, he may ask you to return Tuesday or Tuesday and Wednesday, or send you back to us for a start here on Tuesday. It'll be up to him as to your orientation and how comfortable he is with your ability to absorb the procedures. I suspect you'll be back here Tuesday. Sounds good, Dan said, smiling both for Marvin and for the coffee that was actually remarkably good. The sound of a bell startled Dan, as Marvin said. That's the change of class bell. Everyone will be filing out for an hour of lunch, so let's finish our coffees and head to the conference room to meet the faculty in a few minutes when the students have a chance to file out. Do you have a place for the students to eat? Dan queried, taking another sip of his coffee. No, we just don't have the room for that. Even though we have two entire floors, they're all classrooms and labs, except for the conference room that the teachers use as their lunch and prep room when they have a free period. We, or rather you, will try to schedule a free period for everyone during the day so that they can work on their lesson plans or otherwise prepare for classes, grade papers, and be on standby to cover for teachers who are absent. How many classes does each faculty member teach? Oh, usually 5 hours a day, 5 55-minute classes, typically. They teach 5 classes every day? Dan queried, surprised. Yes. Remember, this is not a university where faculty have a typical workload of 2 or 3 classes and research institutions or 4 to 5 classes at non-research teaching colleges for a total of roughly 6 to 15 contact hours a week. The teaching load is just the tip of the iceberg for them, especially at research institutions where they publish or perish is the rule, and they spend countless hours in research, writing, and editing publications for highly selective peer-reviewed journals. Then there are grant-related activities, departments, school and university service commitments, advisement, and so on. For your faculty, 25 teaching hours a week and 5 hours on standby duty in the free period sounds like a heavy load, but that's all they do. They have no publication or service requirements of any kind or student advisement to speak of either. We have counselors and Bob for that, or you if academic or behavioral issues are involved. They prepare their lesson plans, teach their classes, give exams from time to time, and go home free and clear at the end of the day. Do faculty have office space on campus? No, they can use the conference room, which is seldom used for anything other than lunch and prep time, but they don't really need it. Again, no advisement is needed, as the curriculum is fixed for every program, and students don't need to make choices other than initial certificate programs that they want to enroll in. But Howard Green will go over all of that with you on Monday, Marvin added, smiling. Don't try to filter this through a university lens. This is more like high school or even middle school in terms of the faculty workload and credentialing. Less in some cases, as we can hire teachers with just the baccalaureate degree for most classes. That took Dan by surprise. He did not expect people with terminal degrees, but just baccalaureates. His smile began to fade. Let's go meet your faculty, Marvin cheerfully intoned while standing and motioning towards the door. Dan rose, put his now empty coffee cup on the side table, and walked behind Marvin, a bit less sure about what he was about to get himself into than when he had walked into the office, but still optimistic despite the red flags popping up in the back of his mind. Chapter 5. Walking back to the reception area and passing the still smiling receptionist, busy on the phone, Marvin led Dan to the double swinging doors marked 2 classrooms. Directly ahead of them. He opened the door to the right as a few students still poured through the one on the left and held it open for Dan to follow, then moved to his left down a corridor to what appeared to be a corner office on the left of the hallway and opened the door to a conference room. It was not what Dan had expected. In addition to needing a new coat of paint, The room, while large, was quite unattractive and sported a collection of metal folding chairs around a long, worn, wooden conference table. Sitting around the table were a dozen people chatting, scribbling on paper, or reading paperback books while eating their lunch, mostly out of brown paper bags or plastic containers.
"Good afternoon, everyone," Marvin intoned cheerfully. "I wanted to take a moment to introduce you to your new academic dean, Dr. Dan Amore. He is starting with us today, and we'll be back on Tuesday or Wednesday after visiting our flagship school for an orientation."
"Hello, everyone," Dan said, looking around the room and smiling. Most of the faculty members smiled or nodded back at him with tentative hi, hello, or good afternoon. Some simply looked at him blankly, neither smiling nor scowling, seemingly wary, weary, or just uninterested. Marvin then told the group a bit about Dan's background and how pleased he was to have him on board and proceeded to go around the room introducing each teacher by name and telling Dan in general the subject areas that they taught. When Marvin had introduced everyone, including Jaime, the lab tech, who Marvin said would be able to help Dan with anything he needed, Dan very briefly addressed the group.
"First, I apologize for interrupting your lunch break, but I'm very pleased for the opportunity to meet with all of you. I want to get to know you and learn how I can best help you serve our students. When I'm settled in next week, I will do my best to meet with each of you as your schedules allow. Meantime, enjoy your lunch and have a good weekend."
Marvin then said, "Yes, have a good weekend. You'll have plenty of opportunity to get to know one another in the coming weeks." He then escorted Dan out of the room as the hum of conversation once again began to rise in the room behind them.
"Now, let's go look at your office, and then we'll get you over to Bob to fill out the paperwork," Marvin said, walking Dan through the now nearly empty corridor. They passed through closed and locked labs, as well as a few classrooms that remained open, some of which had students at their desks eating lunch or writing in their notebooks during the lunch break.
"Mr. Chang, our janitor, complains that students sometimes don't clean up after themselves when they eat lunch at their desks, but we need to have some flexibility as there is no other place for students who don't want to go out for lunch to eat. There's a small cafe downstairs, you may have noticed, but they have no seating available, so many students bring their own lunch or run down and grab a sandwich or a snack and come to the empty classrooms on both floors," Marvin noted as they passed some students eating at their desks and chatting.
"It sounds fine. As long as they make a reasonable effort to tidy up, I'll look into the matter," Dan offered.
One of the young women sitting at her desk and daintily nibbling at a sandwich looked at him intently as they passed by. She was a remarkably beautiful, petite, blonde, with shoulder-length hair and eyes the color of a cloudless sky at midday. She wore a dark blue dress with designs of tiny pink flowers and high heels, looking more like a model than a student. She followed Dan with her eyes, regaling him with a broad smile as he passed by the classroom, with the usual fishbowl window all along its wall. For some reason, he blushed and looked ahead, but kept her in his peripheral vision. She was simply stunning, almost painfully beautiful, and seemed completely out of place. Next to her sat another young woman, also in her early 20s, with wavy black hair below her shoulders, wearing a black and white business suit with a skirt just about over her knees, a white silk blouse, and a jacket that flared out slightly at her hips, accentuating her figure. The second woman was also petite, but shorter than the first, and wearing 3-inch high heel shoes. She also momentarily glanced at Dan as he walked by, stopping her conversation with her companion to see what had caught her attention. If Marvin noticed, he said nothing, and shepherded Dan to his office one door away from the classroom,
fishing in his pocket for a key to open it. The first thing Dan noticed is that his office, like every classroom and lab, had the same waist-high picture window along its entire wall facing the hallway. That made him frown. The second thing he noticed is that the office was small and had no window to the outside. Marvin opened the door and motioned Dan to enter ahead of him. The room was perhaps 9 feet wide by 12 feet long, just big enough for two desks, one slightly more than 3 feet from the wall to the left, leaving whoever sat there a good view of the corridor to their right through the long window, and the other much smaller desk immediately across from the door, facing the wall opposite to that of the larger desk. Three of the four walls had shelving for two tiers of books, and there was a four-drawer file cabinet immediately to the left of the main desk. There were two small chairs in front of the main desk and a high-back leather chair behind it, and a small secretary's chair for the smaller desk that faced the wall across from the main desk. The window, Dan noticed, did not have any blinds of any kind for privacy. That would have to change. Marvin pointed to the shelves and said, "You will find in those large folders the lesson plans for the last 3 years. We need to keep them in the file in case of an audit. The file cabinets contain information about your teachers and their credentials to aid you in making up their schedules. We have a new cohort beginning a week from Monday, for which you'll need to assign coverage from your staff. That will be your first task for next week, but it should not be too difficult as faculty tend to teach the same classes in every cohort. State Ed requires teachers to have certain degrees and coursework in order to teach specific courses. Two of your teachers have business education degrees, which are perfect, since they can teach almost every course we offer, other than the nursing or electronics courses. But most of the traditional courses in math, English, and the like can be taught by any of them. And with no tenure, union, or seniority issues to worry about, you can assign classes as you like, as long as the state ed requirements for credentialing are met in the relevant courses that require specialized degrees or coursework. You'll get the handle of that quickly. It's really not very complicated."
"Will I have access to secretarial support?" Dan asked.
"We don't have money in the budget for you to have a full-time secretary at this time, but I'll assign a part-time secretary for you from our secretarial pool, and you can borrow the receptionist anytime you need her as well, if you need work done when your secretary is unavailable. She is fully qualified, types 80 words per minute, and knows shorthand if you need to dictate correspondence or reports. We have a couple of student workers who can fill in for the receptionist and also give you additional support as needed, if you need it, for help with filing, typing, and the like when your secretary is not available. Just let me know your preference. That's what the second desk is for," he finished, pointing at the smaller of the two desks.
"I can have a Selectra typewriter brought in if you'd like."
"I will likely do most of my own correspondence, but it would be helpful to have a computer and printer instead of a typewriter on the small desk, if possible, as I've gotten used to doing my writing on WordStar or WordPerfect, and would also like to be able to use spreadsheets and database management programs for record keeping and reports.
I have a transportable compact computer that I will assign to you. You can use it here or take it home whenever you like. And I'll get Jaime to connect a dot matrix printer from our classroom surplus," Marvin said.
"Thank you, Marvin. That would be great."
"Fine, fine. Now let's get you over to Bob for that paperwork."
With that, Marvin turned around to head back to Bob's office, smiling pleasantly, with Dan following close behind, through the double doors, past the still smiling receptionist on the phone, and past the second door to Bob's office.
the first on the right in the administration wing of the floor. Bob noticed Marvin standing at the open door of his office with Dan at his side as he looked up from the pile of papers on his desk and smiled at them, chuckling lightly.
Well, so they caught you, huh? Welcome aboard, Dan.
Dan had liked Bob even from his first brief meeting. He seemed a grounded, genuine straight shooter with a good sense of humor, and he sensed that he would get along very well with the HR director / placement counselor.
I'll leave you two to fill out the paperwork, Marvin said, still smiling. No need to go back to my office when you're done here, Dan. Bob will give you the particulars as to your meeting Monday at the Manhattan School, and I'll probably see you here Tuesday or Wednesday of next week.
Check in with me then. Meantime, I'll have Jaime, your lab tech, set up the compact and the printer, so you'll be set to go next week. Take care and have a good weekend.
With that, he offered Dan his hand and walked out, leaving him with Bob, who once again chuckled softly and good-naturedly.
Sit down, Dan. Make yourself comfortable, Bob said, pointing to one of two chairs across from his desk.
He then pushed the pile of papers he had been working on to one side of his desk and fished a file folder out of a desk drawer.
Let's see, he said. We have some forms here you'll need to fill out, although I have already completed much of the required information. I will need you to have your official college and law school transcript sent to my attention, but there's no hurry. Any time in the next couple of weeks will do.
He then passed several sheets of paper to Dan. Mostly, I'll need your signature where indicated on the forms. Please read the terms of your contract before signing and ask any questions you have.
Dan reviewed the papers quickly and signed on the places where indicated, adding personal information where required, including his date of birth, social security number, and his educational information.
I have a copy of your resume, cover letter, and formal job offer on file. A copy of the latter was not mailed to you, as the decision was made too quickly for it to reach you in time. You will also see an attachment to the offer of employment listing the salary, benefits, and related information, Bob added.
Dan dutifully looked over the materials, signed his at-will employment contract, and returned the package to Bob, keeping the copy of the offer of employment letter with its attachment for future reference.
I'm sure Marvin would have gone over your basic responsibilities with you, but if there's anything you would like to know that was not covered, feel free to ask, Bob said.
While taking the paperwork from Dan and nodding after briefly scanning each page, then putting the papers in the file folder on his desk. Obviously, Dan's file.
Are you a U.S. citizen? He added.
Yes, Dan answered, and I brought my passport and social security card in addition to my driver's license if you'd like to make copies now.
That's great, Dan. Yes, please, just set the passport and driver's license. We'll do nicely.
You bet, said Dan, reaching into his leather portfolio for the passport and retrieving his license from his wallet.
So, what can I tell you about PEMPTY while I make copies of these for your files? He asked while getting up and going to a small Xerox machine to his right.
Well, for one thing, I'd like to know why such a hurry to hire me, if you can tell me.
Oh, sure. Our last academic dean quit without giving us notice. He wanted to go back to his old job, and there's no backup. So we were very happy when you applied. We were considering several other candidates, but none with your credentials and law background. Marvin wanted to snap you up before you came to your senses, he chortled again.
Jaime, the lab tech, wanted the job and has been doing some of the dean's duties for a week, but he was never considered. He has a 2-year degree from LaGuardia Community College, and, well, even for us, that was unacceptable. He just loves standing in, verifying time cards and the like.
Time cards? Dan asked.
Didn't Marvin tell you? One of your responsibilities is verifying time cards every week. Faculty must punch in and out to get paid and get docked if they're even a minute late or punch out a minute early, at least when Jaime checks them.
He loves enforcing the docking of time, done in 15-minute increments. Someone punches in a minute late, they get docked for a quarter hour. 16 minutes late, they lose half an hour, and the same with clocking out early. You gotta be kidding. Well, I'm afraid not. That order comes from the top, and there's time clock, like the ones used in most factories that everyone needs to punch in. Everyone except you, Marvin, the director of admissions, and me, that is. We have one of those in this wing, too, for the support staff. I'm not docking people 15 minutes for punching in a minute late. The whole idea of having time clocks for faculty is insulting. Oh, they don't mind. Only one or two teach as adjuncts at local community colleges. The rest are proprietary business school lifers who are used to the grind. It's the same everywhere, at least everywhere they've been. What about you, Bob? Oh, I'm actually a high school English teacher. I have a master's in English and taught for about 10 years before coming to work here. Got tired of the grind and of having to put up with increasingly unruly students that I had no real power to discipline in my classes. This is much nicer, and the pay is fairly comparable, you know, with a lot less stress. What's Marvin's background? He's also a lifer. This is his fifth year here, and he's been a director in at least two other schools that I know of. He's a good guy, really. He's good to work with, and you can trust him. At least you can trust him more than anyone at corporate or at the other schools, Bob said, chuckling again. I guess there's a lot of turnaround in this position. Yes, school directors can be as mercenary as the owners of these places, but overall, this is not a bad organization. They're all bottom-line oriented, but will leave you alone as long as you do your job. Your challenge is retaining your teachers and keeping students in line. Part of your responsibility is dealing with problem students, and that your job is not that different from high school deans. But it's not nearly as restrictive, and student issues should not present a real challenge for you. Your teachers can be more of a problem than some of the students. Most keep perfectly good order in their classrooms, but others are, well, weak and whiny, and they will send students to you because they're unwilling or unable to deal with them themselves. What are my powers as far as disciplining students, or faculty for that matter? Well, as far as students are concerned, pretty much absolute powers. You can suspend them for a day, a week, or a month if they cause problems, and they'll have to leave. No one will question your judgment on that, unless, of course, you discipline too many and then profits suffer if they don't come back. But that's very rare. They will all come back, or they will not get their tuition paid for by Uncle Sam and the state, and in many cases, they will also, you know, have their welfare checks taken away if they won't go to work or school and are able-bodied. Bob said, earnest, serious, but apparently enjoying the look of disbelief that seemed to blossom on Dan's face like a rose touched by the first rays of the rising sun. What about faculty? Any problems I need to be aware of? What powers do I have to discipline them? Dan asked, and by this time he began taking notes. He was really grateful for Bob's candor, though beginning to realize some of the challenges he was going to have to face. Well, they're as mercenary and disloyal as everybody else in this business. If they get a better offer from another proprietary degree mill, or especially from a public school system or community college, most will bolt. There's a fair amount of turnover. But frankly, that depends largely on who the dean is and how she or he treats them. Most of my tenure here, and there have been two, you are the third in 5 years, have not been very effective at working with them or making them feel valued. So they're a bit gun-shy. They will expect little from you, and in return, frankly, you can expect more or less the same from them. They will do their job. Almost all will teach their classes regularly and pretty well, but that's about as far as it'll go. Though I think they will respond well to you, I just have a feeling. What do you mean? Dan asked. Well, you know, you obviously give a shit, and it shows, and they will notice that. Just give them a little time. Thanks, Bob, Dan said, glad for the sentiment, but still processing what he was hearing. The unforeseen challenges before him were beginning to look daunting, but he was not afraid of a challenge like most naive folks who feel everything is going just fine until the very moment they step right into the abyss. But I have no experience at this, and it is becoming clear I'll face challenges I was completely unaware of until now. Don't worry, Dan. I know you'll do fine. We've had some very experienced burnouts on the job who failed miserably, at least one of whom was nearly tar and feathered before finally getting the hint and moving on. Inexperience is something you will quickly overcome. You have the right tools and attitude, and you will win at least most of them over, I think, pretty quickly. At least they'll respect your background and the fact that you have some real credentials, unlike their last dean. Keep in mind that they have no tenure, no union, and serve largely at your pleasure. Most of them like their jobs, and this is a much better place than most in this industry. They will depend on you for their livelihood, and though you do not have the power to give them raises or lessen their teaching loads, you can make a great deal of difference in their quality of life here and in how they are valued. If you are fair with them, most will quickly learn to appreciate you. You've given me a lot to think about, Bob. I appreciate your honesty. Thank you. Hey, I'm glad you're here, Dan. I expect we're going to get along very well. One question, Bob. I know that classes here start at 9 a.m. and go on until 10 p.m. Monday through Friday. What is the expectation for my being on site? I'm responsible for day and evening classes, but obviously I'm not going to be able or willing to be here 13 hours a day on a regular basis. At this point, Bob finally laughed out loud, rather than merely chuckling. No, Dan, you're expected to be here regularly, but your schedule is largely up to you. Most of your predecessors worked 35 to 40 hours a week, counting lunch. You set your own schedule. Marvin won't care as long as classes run smoothly and are covered when needed, due to absences. You should always give faculty a free period in addition to their noon lunch break, staggered, so you always have at least one faculty member free every period to call on if one of them is out sick. They know they have to cover for each other, and absenteeism really is not something that's been a problem here. They don't get paid if they don't work, so they always show up, unless they are really sick or have a personal emergency. Also, if they don't show up regularly, they get fired quickly by the dean with Marvin's blessing. They know to call the receptionist if they are not able to make it to any class or for the day. She then has a student worker get in touch with faculty who are free at the required times that day to tell them that they need to cover a class. They are pretty good at arranging these things in advance, other than in real emergencies, of course. So it should rarely involve you directly. Because they have their lesson plans in advance, they can easily cover one another's classes or give an impromptu assignment for them to work on from their books. If I'm free and it's a light day, can I cover their classes if I want to? Dan asked. You can do whatever you want, but be careful. Being too caring and accommodating can backfire. Most of your teachers are fairly conscientious, but not all. If you're willing to cover for them, some will likely take unfair advantage. That is at least my guess, though I can't say for sure, as no previous dean has been willing to teach any classes to my knowledge. Again, you've really given me a lot to think about, Bob. Can I take you to lunch next week when I get back here? Just my way of saying thanks, and I really like the company as well, as an idea of where one can safely eat around here. Sure, Dan, but we'll do this often. No need to spring for lunch. Fine, but the first one's on me. We can split the bill after that if you like, okay? You bet. I look forward to it, Dan. After that, Bob gave Dan some additional papers, including his card with the address of the Manhattan School scribbled on the back and the school's main number along with Dean Howard Green's name as his 9 a.m. appointment. Bob then returned Dan's license and passport, and went over the details of the pension and health plans. Both were actually quite generous. And Dan was done with his first day shortly after that.